been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Pro games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, the man on my immediate left, Ezra Ginsberg. Dave Manuk away from the show. He'll be back next week. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can send us a text in studio. And make sure you got your texting fingers ready today, because we have some giveaways for you throughout the show today. So stay tuned for that. We're going to send you to Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, swing some sticks, by which I mean golf clubs. We're going to send you to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, have some belly laughs. So that all that coming up today on the show, you can stay tuned for some great giveaways along those lines. Of course, you can always check out our website. That's illegalcurve.com. Not a ton of Jets news, but it's always good for you to drop by, see how things are happening over there. I say good morning now to the man, the myth, the legend, T-minus 2 weeks, less a day prior to him being a married man.
It's getting very close. It's
getting very close. I want to, we'll talk about the Jets and we'll talk about the world of hockey, but it's, you know, the August long weekend, so I think I have a little leeway to have a little bit of fun.
Good morning, Drew, by the way.
Good morning to you too, Ezzy. You know, you're getting married, you know, 13 days from now, and then 6 days from now, you're competing in a pierogi eating contest. Many people before their wedding try and do things to make themselves healthier, let's say. I don't know very many people who engage in competitive eating contests the week before their wedding, so I guess I have to say kudos to you for that. I'm not 100% sure if I'm supposed to be congratulating you, if I'm supposed to be, you know, giving sympathy to Naomi. Yeah, I'm just really not sure how to proceed with the news that you're competing in a competitive eating contest 7 days before your wedding.
Well, first of all,
yeah,
I don't think it's been scientifically proven that pierogies aren't healthy, because they do have potatoes in them.
This coming from the same man who once made an argument that Kraft dinner was healthy, so go on.
No, I never said Kraft dinner was healthy. I said Kraft dinner was option for dinner.
You did not. I have the audio. I will bring it up if I have to, but you said it was healthy. Go on.
And secondly, I'm going to be making my triumphant return,
yes,
to the third annual pierogi eating competition, because as you know, I did not compete last year.
No, because I think you were still in the hospital from the year before his competition.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling too good after the first annual. But I have to make my return because Huss has put a $100 bounty on Stepdaddy Jay, last year's winner.
Okay.
So I have to step up my game and show Stepdaddy Jay.
So is Big Daddy E going to be able to take down Stepdaddy J?
You know what the reality is? I love to eat, as you know, Drew.
Uh-huh.
But I can't compete against these competitive eaters. Like, Stepdaddy J is a professional, so obviously he's the favorite to win, but it's all in good fun. Huss does a great job with it at the Spirit of Ukraine Pavilion.
Yeah.
And any opportunity I have to eat free food, I'm going to jump on it.
There you go. So that's next Friday evening. You can look forward to that as he's competing in a competitive eating, pierogi eating competition. Let's start with the Winnipeg Jets, because it is a Winnipeg-based NHL Jets radio show. Makes sense.
Training camp is getting closer. I was looking at the calendar,
and
I was mainly looking at the calendar because, as you mentioned, my wedding is in 13 days,
yes,
but we're 6 or so weeks away from training camp here, Drew.
You know what? The Young Stars competition out in Penticton, which is always sort of one of those key milestones on the calendar, it starts on Friday, September 8th. So that's what, a month and 3 days from now? So, I mean, before you know it, there's going to be live hockey broadcast back here on TSN 1290. In fact, I think there might even be one tonight. I think their World Junior Summer Showcase game is going to be on the station later on tonight, if
I'm
not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right. Canada plays the U.S. at 6 o'clock. I actually watched yesterday's game between the Americans and the Finns. And, you know, I imagine there weren't a ton of hockey fans watching that tournament in August, but, you know, it was actually pretty good hockey.
Yeah.
The Americans won that game, and Canada will face the U.S., and those are obviously the two favorites for the 2018 World Juniors in Buffalo, as they usually are. You're throwing in Finland and Sweden and Russia. The usual five countries are,
sure,
are usually the favorites to win, but, you know, it gives us something to talk about.
It certainly does. Mike Morreale of NHL.com, who's been covering the World Juniors Summer Showcase, is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. But getting back to the Winnipeg Jets, and I was reading an interesting article that Travis Yost wrote this week on TSN.ca, and it was about Mark Scheifele and how Mark Scheifele is sort of the straw that stirs the drink for the Winnipeg Jets offensively, in particular when he was playing with Patrick Laine and Nikolaj Ehlers. And it was sort of, you know, the stats that came out of it were intriguing to me, that when those three guys play together, you know, Laine, Scheifele, Ehlers, you know, they average 5 goals for every 60 minutes of 5-on-5 ice time and converting on almost 1 of every 5 shots on goal. I mean, those are tremendous numbers. When Laine and Ehlers, when they're playing together and they're playing with Scheifele, they scored 24 goals at 5-on-5 action and only 12 goals away from Mark Scheifele as their centerman. So when that's when Ehlers and Laine are together, Scheifele, you can see their production is almost twice as good with Scheifele in the middle as opposed to somebody else in the middle. From your perspective, as we sit here on August 5th, should Laine, Scheifele, and Ehlers, should that be a line going forward? Should that be a line that Paul Maurice pencils in for the 2017-18 regular season? Because we know that they've played, you know, there was the Schwielers line, the Scheifele, Wheeler, Scheifele, Wheeler, Ehlers line, that's a mouthful, that got a lot of buzz last year as well. Do you think that it should be Laine, Scheifele, and Ehlers going forward to start the 2017-18 season?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and it was a great article written by Travis Yost that I believe was posted earlier in the week on Monday, if I'm not mistaken. And when you're talking about that question, I mean, we know that Mark Scheifele is going to be the number one center, and most likely Nikolaj Ehlers is going to be the number one left winger. So me, the question really is, should Patrick Laine be the number one right winger over Blake Wheeler? As you mentioned, that was the line for the majority of the season, Mark Scheifele between Nikolaj Ehlers and Blake Wheeler, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about Patrick Laine, most likely he's either going to be on that top line or the second line. Nobody thinks that Patrick Laine is going to be on the third line. Yeah. If he's on the third line, then Paul Maurice probably has a concussion.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about, you know, these numbers, Drew, you mentioned them. To me, what's really impressive is Scheifele's 11 of 17 goals coming at 5-on-5 with Laine and Ehlers.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Scheifele and Ehlers have great chemistry. We know that Scheifele and Wheeler have great chemistry, but I think these numbers show that Scheifele also has excellent chemistry with Patrick Laine. So, I mean, when I did my projected line combinations in early July, I kind of was contemplating in my own head, you know, should Patrick Laine be the number one right winger, you know, over Blake Wheeler? And it's a good problem to have for Paul Maurice. I mean, it's basically like pick your weapon, right?
Let me just stop you there for a second. And when we say, you know, the top line, I really think that, you know, if you go Ehlers, Laine, Scheifele, and then you go Wheeler, Little, Perreault, I don't know that that's necessarily a one and then a second line. I think those are maybe two number one lines, more or less.
Right, and I mean, the Scheifele, Ehlers, Laine line, if that is the line, would be your number one line. I mean, those are your three best offensive players, and that's no disrespect to Blake Wheeler. I mean, he's in that conversation, too. I mean, we could argue all day about, you know, who's a better offensive player between Nikolaj Ehlers and Blake Wheeler, but it's clear that Patrick Laine is well on his way to posting a 50-goal season. It's just a matter of time. I mean, mm-hmm. he scored 36 goals last year, and he missed 9 games. So I think he could easily score 50. I don't think either of us are going to argue that he's probably going to score at least 40 next year, right?
Assuming he's healthy, absolutely.
And here we are in August talking about this, and, you know, I have a feeling that when we are in early October and the season is starting, it is going to be Mark Scheifele between Blake Wheeler and Nikolaj Ehlers. But the reality is, these lines are going to change, and if it shows to Paul Maurice, I should say, if these numbers are similar at the early part of the season when they are put together, meaning, let's say they decide to put Blake Wheeler back with Brian Little, mm-hmm. and Patrick Laine really clicks with Mark Scheifele and Nikolaj Ehlers, I don't see them breaking that lineup. But really, I think these lines are going to be fluid. The bigger question to me is who's going to play left wing on that second line, because I agree, Matthew Perreault He seems like the likely candidate, but, you know, does Kyle Connor get a chance on that second line? You know, Matthew Perreault gives them a lot of flexibility because he can play center, he can play on the second or third lines, but this article is very interesting because it kind of brings up the question of should you load up on that top line, right? And when you have Blake Wheeler and his familiarity with Brian Little, to me, that's why I would argue that, yes, you should put Patrick Laine on the top line because he is your number one sniper. And if you put Blake Wheeler on that second line, you know what you're going to get. I mean, Brian Little and Blake Wheeler have played together for 6+ years, mm-hmm. dating back to Atlanta.
Sure.
Right? So, I mean, if you put Blake Wheeler on your second line, you're kind of spreading your offense out nicely there.
Well, I agree with you because I don't, it's not like you're putting Blake Wheeler, who, I mean, is certainly one of the top five right wingers in the NHL. You're not putting Blake Wheeler with a bunch of dead weight. I mean, you know, Brian Little and Blake Wheeler almost, they go together. It just naturally you expect to see them together after having played together for so many years. So
what I don't, sorry, Drew, to interrupt you. What I thought that was missing in this article was how well Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler have played together.
Sure.
Right? So, I mean, Mark Scheifele is the key. As you mentioned, he's the straw that stirs the number one line's drink, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you put Scheifele with anybody, most likely they're going to produce because he's an elite center now. He's proven that last year with a career year, right? And even before that, a couple of years ago, he really established himself as a really good center in the NHL after kind of starting off slowly, going back to Barry and all of that. So when you talk about Blake Wheeler, I mean, he's been very good on the top line. Maybe his numbers were a little bit down last year, but you still know what you're going to get. You're going to get nearly a point a game player.
Yeah.
So if you do put Patrick Laine with Mark Scheifele for the majority of the season, you have to make sure that Blake Wheeler is still going to produce at the level you want him to produce. And I wouldn't be worried about that because, as we know, Brian Little was amazing after he came back after missing 20-plus games with that injury that he suffered in the first game. So it's a very interesting question. I personally do think, as I said, Blake Wheeler is going to start the season on the top line, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see Laine on the top line for a big chunk of the season.
Well, what I like about the idea of putting Wheeler and Little together, and let's say with Kyle Connor, is that Kyle Connor, who's obviously would be a rookie in the NHL this coming season, there's no pressure on him to drive a line. If he's on the third line, if Kyle Connor comes up and he's on the third line left wing with Nick Petan and Mark O'Dano or Adam Lowry and somebody else, there's pressure on him to produce offensively in that case. When you're with Little and Wheeler, first of all, you're with two veterans who certainly know how to play in the NHL and can be excellent mentors for a young forward. And there's no pressure on him to necessarily be the driving force of the offense there.
And don't you want an offensive talent like Kyle Connor in your top six? Like,
I think you want him playing with other offensively talented players, certainly.
Right, and it's not a given because, I mean, there's a chance that Kyle Connor doesn't start the season with the Jets. I personally do think he is going to start the season with the Jets. I think he proved last year towards the end of the season, the last 20 or 30 games with the Manitoba Moose, he was red hot, probably the last 40 games of the season. So when you're talking about, you know, the different line combinations for Paul Maurice,
mm-hmm.
this is the most depth he's ever had. Maybe looking back, you could say that the year the Jets made the playoffs and they went out and they acquired Lee Stempniak and Yuri Tulusti, they had pretty good depth. But this is a different level of depth. You have guys like Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic just basically knocking at the door for an everyday spot with the Jets, right? So it's going to be very interesting. I mean, the key is, and Travis Yost mentioned this in his article, and we'll tweet it out, and you should take a look at the article. Basically, you want to maximize the opportunities that Patrick Laine has. You want to get him the maximum amount of shots. And for Paul Maurice, if that's Mark Scheifele, then you should be putting Laine with Scheifele.
Yeah, and I don't think Blake Wheeler will have a problem with that, even if it's a quote-unquote second-line right-wing spot that he's occupying, because I think you'll see... I don't think you'll see a significant difference between the first line and the second line minutes wise. And I think he'll have an opportunity along with Brian Little, guy he's very familiar with, and presumably either Matthew Perreault or Kyle Connor to really drive the bus on not necessarily secondary scoring, but just primary scoring from a second line. I think there's a difference between the two.
It really depends on what Paul Maurice wants to accomplish with that second line, right? And we know that the top two lines are going to have a lot of offense. The Jets have no shortage of guys that can score. I mean, mm-hmm. we saw that last year. They scored the seventh most goals in the league. I would be shocked if they weren't top 10 in the league again next year, considering all the weapons they have. But really, it's going to come down to the chemistry that they establish early on in training camp through the early part of the season. But even that, players go through slumps, and lines are fluid, as I mentioned earlier. So, I mean, I don't think that you're going to see necessarily Blake Wheeler or Patrick Laine for all 82 games
of
the season,
right?
It never
is.
And I would argue, as I said earlier, that most likely you're going to see a combination. The only given, Drew, is that Mark Scheifele and Nikolaj Ehlers are entrenched on that first line. I don't think anybody's going to argue that. Really, it's going to come down to, is Paul Maurice going to trust Patrick Laine? Because when you're out there and you're a top line, you're going to be facing the other team's top checking line, right?
Sure.
Or the team's top scoring line. So really it comes down to how Paul Maurice wants to use Laine. And we know he's going to be out there on the first power play. That's not a question. It's really when you have a guy like Blake Wheeler, your captain, who's been your number one right winger now for 6+ years.
Mm-hmm.
Has Patrick Laine done enough to earn that spot?
Well, but doesn't the idea of Blake Wheeler going up against a team's second-pairing defense and a team's not their top checking line, doesn't that sound appealing to, well, Jets fans and to Wheeler himself? Wouldn't he say, well, look at the opportunity I'm going to get here to be able to do damage? You know, so be it. It's not against the best of the opposition, but I know that Scheifele and Laine and Ehlers are going to get their points against the best of the opposition. Now I can really rack up points and really be successful against teams lesser opposition.
And as we talked about before, Drew, you know that Little and Wheeler have that familiarity. You know that they can get the job done both offensively and defensively.
Yeah.
And so whether you put a Matthew Perreault or a rookie like Kyle Connor out there, you know what you're going to get, and you don't have to worry about them missing their defensive responsibilities or going into lengthy scoring slumps. Wheeler and Little just produce. That's what they do.
Absolutely. This opening segment was brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, official golf course of Illegal Curve Hockey. Bell Acres offers an 18-hole championship golf course that golfers of all levels can enjoy. For more information or to book a tee time today, visit bellacres.com. They have a long weekend special going on right now. Anytime this Saturday, Sunday, or Monday after 11 in the morning, $39 to golf along with a cart. Get in touch with Bell Acres, bellacres.com. Right now, send us a text to 129090. Text Bell Acres to 129090. We're going to give somebody a pair of passes to go hit the links at Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. When we come back, we discuss the Colorado Avalanche, their perplexing offseason, and the ongoing Matt Duchene saga. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
He's a center who can also play wing. He's got great speed. He's a great stick handler. He's got a great shot. I think if you put Matt Duchene in the right situation, he'll score 30 goals and 60 points again.
I have no doubts that he will. I mean, I think he is a fantastic talent who is being absolutely wasted on a Colorado team and a Colorado organization that just doesn't seem to know what the hell they're doing.
Colorado has a lot of work to do, Drew. And when you look at the moves they made in the offseason, and I know you touched on them last week, bringing in Colin Wilson, good solid player, but he's a complimentary player at this point
in his
career.
He's a third-line player.
Yeah, he's a good third-line player, but he's not a guy that's going to change your fortunes. Nail Yakupov, I mean, Drew, you know how I feel about Nail Yakupov.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, he's a bust. Yeah. One of the worst first overall picks ever.
And it's probably worth Colorado throwing a dart to see maybe they can turn him into a reclamation project.
What's the most you're going to get out of Nail Yakupov? And the thing is, he's one-dimensional.
If
right?
you got 20 goals out of him, you'd probably say that the signing is a success.
Sure, but he's a 20-goal player on a bad team.
Right. He doesn't improve your team at this point in his career. I mean,
right.
he maybe wins you one extra game, but it's not enough to make you into a playoff contender.
Nail Yakupov looks great when he's on a breakaway, but he's just not a very good defensive player. And I don't think his commitment to the game has ever been shown, either with Edmonton or the other teams that he's been on. So when you're talking about those moves, and then Jonathan Bernier, okay, well, you lost Calvin Pickard to the Vegas Golden Knights, so you had to sign a goaltender, right?
You needed a backup goaltender.
I think they should have protected Calvin Pickard and then let Semyon Varlamov go. I don't think Vegas would have taken Varlamov.
Not at the $5+ million he's owed, especially when everyone knew they were taking Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, they wouldn't have touched. Why would they touch Varlamov? He's been lousy.
But at least you have Pickard and Varlamov, which I think is a better 1-2 combo than Varlamov and Bernier. That's all I'm saying. I agree with you. I don't think Vegas takes Varlamov in that contract.
I think Pickard could become a number one goalie in the NHL.
Yeah.
I know Bernier can't at this point in his career, And Varlamov is so inconsistent and so injury prone that
he's the new Brzgalov, I think.
Yeah, really, what are you getting out of Varlamov at this point?
And especially with that defense, that's the thing that Joe Sakic didn't address.
Yes.
And that defense is still horrible.
Horrible.
And I realize Tyson Berry and Eric Johnson are decent defensemen, but really I would argue that those are second pairing defensemen on a better team.
Well,
so when you're talking about some of the other defensemen they have, there's just nothing to get you that excited. Like Nikita Zadorov, I'm sorry, I'm not sold on him.
Well, he came over from Buffalo as part of the Ryan O'Reilly trade.
Which was a horrible trade.
Horrible trade for Colorado.
Where's Mikhail Grigorenko now?
He's in the KHL. He left the organization. And so you have Zadorov, and I don't know, Zadorov is certainly not a top pairing defenseman in the NHL. And then you have guys like Mark Barberio. I mean, Mark Barberio he's been run out of, where was he? Ottawa before, if I'm not mistaken? He's been run out of Ottawa.
Tampa Bay,
I mean.
Montreal.
He's been everywhere.
I think it was Montreal, not Ottawa.
Okay. He's certainly, yeah, you're right. He's certainly not a top four defenseman. And then your third pairing defense of Anton Lindholm and Chris Bigras? I mean, come on.
Well, Chris Bigras is a rookie, right?
Yeah.
Coming out of college hockey. And, you know, he's a good young defenseman, but I mean, again, how much are you going to expect out of Chris Bigras? Most likely he's going to be on the third pair, maybe the second pair, but you don't know what you have yet in him. He's got a lot of potential. If we can play, I wanted to play a clip, Drew, if we can, of Dave Poulin talking about Matt Duchene, because I think his points were very well taken about the type of player he thinks Duchene is and whether or not he thinks he'll be traded.
Here's Dave Poulin talking about Matt Duchene.
He's not a standalone player. Yes, he had some big years earlier in his career, but with 41 points last year, that's 154th in the NHL. He's not a standalone individual offensive star. And he has to realize that, and the team has to realize that, because they have to somehow come to a different value than they're coming to right now, because they can't meet a price for him out there. But I think that he will get moved before training camp. I do believe that, and I think they have to reevaluate their valuing of Matt Duchene.
Now, with all the turmoil, do the Avs bring him to camp?
I don't think it'll get to that point, Lindsay. I really don't. I think they'll get to a point through this month, maybe in early September, where they say, we've got a deal, we have to take the deal, we're not going to get what we thought we wanted.
That's Dave Poulin talking about Matt Duchene, saying that he doesn't think he ends up in training camp with the Avalanche. He gets traded between now and then. I'm not as confident as Dave Poulin is on that front. I mean, at this point in time, I don't know what's going to change that all of a sudden Joe Sakic's going to get an offer that he deems good enough for Matt Duchene.
Yeah, and we know the New York Islanders were interested in Matt Duchene, and it was potentially going to be for Travis Hamonic. We obviously know that's not going to happen because Hamonic is now a member of the Flames organization. And then Nashville was another team that was rumored to be after Matt Duchene because they lost James Neal.
Sure.
They obviously went out and they acquired Scott Hartnell, but also Nick Bonino. But when you're talking about Matt Duchene, I have to believe that there's a match there. And Nashville, I think, would be actually a very good match for Matt Duchene. But again, you're not getting one of those top four defensemen from Nashville. So if it's for a first-round pick and a prospect, I think Joe Sakic's got to take it. But I agree with you, Drew. I mean, I thought that Matt Duchene was going to be traded at the draft.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, he'd be traded in July.
No, we thought he'd be traded at the trade deadline last year. I think we thought he'd be traded before the trade deadline when it was obvious that the Avalanche season was completely off the rails. And then you thought he'd be traded at the draft. And then you thought he'd be traded, I don't know, at some point this summer, and here we are. This is the time of the year where the NHL really more or less begins to shut down for the next few weeks. This, you know, all the arbitration hearings are completed. I don't even think anybody actually formally is going to have a formal hearing.
Yeah, late July to late August is probably the sleepiest season in the calendar, but I agree with you, Drew. There's a good chance. I do think Duchene will be traded eventually, but I think there is a good chance that Duchene starts the season with the Avalanche, and maybe he gets traded, you know, in October, November, December. We'll see. But I think if you're Joe Sakic, you have to trade him just to get those returns, because you know you're not going to be a very good team this year. So why are you paying a guy $6 million a year that you know you're most likely not going to re-sign after his contract is up?
And his contract is up in only 2 years from now.
Right.
So every day you wait is a day closer to him being eligible for unrestricted free agency. Oh, perplexing offseason for the Colorado Avalanche. They should be one of the bottom feeders in the NHL this year, barring something unforeseen. You know, for the sake of Avalanche fans, you know, hopefully it happens for them, but it's hard to believe that it's going to. When we come back, we shift our focus to the World Junior Summer Showcase. Mike Morreale of NHL.com joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
And Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on a sunny Saturday morning here in Peg City. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. The man on my left is Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can text us here in studio. Send your messages to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program Mike Morreale of NHL.com. He's covering the World Junior Summer Showcase, which takes place in Plymouth, Michigan. It's been going on all week. It ends later on this evening with a Canada-US tilt, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Mike, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
What's going on, Drew? Ezra, I'm glad to be on the program.
I appreciate you joining us, Mike. You know, the World Junior Summer Showcase has sort of become this event in late July, early August, in what would otherwise be a very sort of quiet time in the NHL and the hockey world calendar. How important is this event from your perspective as far as the upcoming World Junior Hockey Championships in December? A good showing here, it obviously will go a long way to helping you in December, but does a bad showing here really hurt you when it comes to World Junior evaluation time?
Well, I think you hit the nail on your head there, Drew, when you mentioned that it is hockey in July here, or actually August. But, you know, a lot of these team general managers now for these specific countries want to get a chance to see some players that are basically going to fill roles of players that, you know, were quality last year. I mean, I take, for example, the United States, and when I spoke to GM Jim Johansson, you know, he told me that they have a big board in their locker room and they have minutes. They have the players actually played certain minutes, but they don't have the name of that particular player by the minutes played. But it was just an example to show the players that are here at this development camp that these are the minutes we need you to play if you're given a specific role. These are the roles we need to be successful on our team that won a gold medal last year. Are you the player that's going to take these minutes? Are you the player that's going to play this type of time on a power play, this on the penalty kill? Are you going to be the guy that's going to go into the corner and give me a 30-second shift at this particular moment of a game? Because this is what certain players did last year. And I think a lot of the team managers here are out to, in search of players that are going to fulfill those roles. You know, you're seeing a lot of players here that are there's quite a few guys that are here that are 2018 draft eligible. There are obviously a few that were picked in the draft last year, and then there are several returnees who you would expect to play vital roles on the team and maybe earn a C on their jersey for the World Junior Championship. But again, I think, as they say, it's a development camp here. It's a showcase indeed, because you have many of the top prospects that will one day play in the NHL here. But for the most part, it's development. I think they want to see how lines, how configurations go, who mixes well with whom, and the chemistry of certain line mates and defense pairs. So that's what makes it very interesting. And you see players going all out. You see a Brady Tkachuk playing like a Matthew Tkachuk, going into the corners. Same type player, guys, has the mouthpiece out of the mouth. It's dangling. He's hitting guys. He's got, you know, he's using his rear end in the slot to shield guys off. It's a typical Tkachuk player, and he's fun to watch. But a lot of players are giving it their all for every country, including your boy Logan Stanley, who's here with Team Canada as well. I think he's had a nice showing here.
Yeah, you just mentioned Logan Stanley, and that leads nicely into my next question. Won the Memorial Cup with the Windsor Spitfires. How has he looked to you? I know he scored a goal yesterday, and do you expect him to make the final roster for Team Canada?
Yeah, you know, a couple shifts, guys, they had him playing alongside Cale Makar, obviously the first-round pick, number 4 overall by the Colorado Avalanche in last year's draft. Logan Stanley, of course, in the 2016 draft, number 18 to the Jets. You know, he's still as weird as it sounds. I mean, this is a player that, what, is 6'6", 230 pounds. He just needs to grow into his body a little bit more, I think, guys. We believe that when, you know, the strength can come underneath him with his legs and his body matching his actual physical size, you're going to see a real strong player here. You know, I've liked what I've seen in Stanley. He's been efficient in the shifts that he's been given here. And he's been, like I said, he's been tried with several different, players, to see where he fits, to see if indeed he can be a vital asset to this team as a big defensive guy who can just lean on players, tire them down, wear them down. And to put him on a line and to pair him with the Cale Makar makes a lot of sense. I liked it. I know Cale scored a goal yesterday. You have a speedy, quick guy who's offensive-minded in Cale Makar. And then you have that Logan Stanley guy, big defensive defenseman. And as I said, can lean on guys, can, you know, hit guys, and is an intimidating presence out there. So I've liked what I've seen in Stanley so far. It'll be interesting to see come December was when, you know, everything starts to heat up when you have select camps for all these countries. But I think Logan Stanley will make it there, and it'll be interesting to see what the team, Canada's management, thinks of him then.
Mike Morreale is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking to Mike about the 2017 World Junior Summer Showcase, a sort of preview evaluation camp for the upcoming World Junior Hockey Championships in December. Mike, another Jets defenseman that was drafted, a lot of people are excited about, that's Dylan Samberg of Hermantown, Minnesota. He's playing for Team USA at this camp. What have been your thoughts about his performance so far?
He's a big kid. He's 6'3", 190 pounds, good defenseman. He skates real well. He has a real good first pass. You know, he made the first round of cuts, guys. The U.S. made 10 cuts on Wednesday morning, and Dylan survived that. So a credit to him and a credit to his play and performance here at development camp. He will play a physical game, and he's proven that, and he needs to do that. As I said earlier, I mean, these guys need to show exactly the type of player they are, and then the coaching staffs can fill them into certain roles. He needs to just work on details of his game a little bit, but that'll come over time. He's developing well and has a big bomb of a shot, guys. You know, you put him on the point and you put him on the power play. I mean, he's got a tremendous shot from the point. And what is it about Winnipeg that drafting guys are big shots? You look at Laine, now you got Samberg on D. You know, there's a lot of players there in Winnipeg, a lot of good young faces that are coming up with big shots, and Samberg is in that realm as well. As well, he won the 2017 Reed Larson Award as the top senior high school defenseman in Minnesota this past season. So I like what I see in Samberg. He's been paired, obviously, with different players here in the tournament. And I do like the fact, as I said, that he survived the cuts. And I think Jim Johansson and his staff really think the world of this kid, and he's going to have a good shot, too.
Mike, earlier you mentioned some of those 2018 draft-eligible players, and Rasmus Dahlin of Sweden is projected by many scouts to go first overall next year in Dallas. He's been dealing with an illness this week, but what have your impressions been of the young Swede, and do you think right now he's the clear-cut number one overall pick for next year?
Right now, at this moment, I say I love Dahlin, and I would say that he would be the guy to go number one. But there are several players closing the gap here, guys. This is going to be a special draft. And I don't like to throw around the term generational loosely. We've been spoiled, right? I mean, we've been spoiled, not this past draft, but the two previous with, you know, the McDavids, the Eichels, the Laines, the Austin Matthews. This year was a little bit, you didn't have that type player. You had special players, but not that type player. And I think 2018 is gearing up to be possibly that generational guy. Let's see how these kids perform, but you're right. Rasmus Dahlin has been exceptional in the two games I saw him earlier this week. I paid close attention to him at practice, how he, how he deals with his teammates, you know, the camaraderie there. Everything is working well. They love this kid. I mean, let's face it. I mean, there are players that have been that were drafted 2 years ago that I was talking to this week that had a chance to play with Donald on the back end, and they actually told me it was an honor to play with this kid. And this kid's 17 years old, and already he has that type of esteem and prestige about him, you know, around the Swedish community. The fact that he played on in a men's league as a 16-year-old is something special as well. This kid's going to be a leader, guys, no doubt about it. 15, 20-year NHL player. He'll have Norris Trophy candidate written all over him maybe 6, 7 years down the road. So, big kid. Another defenseman I just have to mention, guys, and we're in this path of 2018, this kid Quinn Hughes from the United States has been absolutely exceptional from what I've seen here. I didn't know much about him, I got to be honest with you. I know he's going to the University of Michigan. I heard some things that, you know, you got to see this kid, Quinn Hughes, and he's got that Chris Letang-style puck-moving ability. And he helped the United States win the U18 gold medal last spring. So Quinn Hughes is a player. Obviously, I mentioned Brady Tkachuk is in this area of possibly going top five, top six in this draft class. So there are a lot of good players here that could go top five. The three I just mentioned could go top five in the 2018 draft. It's going to be a special one.
Mike Morreale is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the World Junior Summer Showcase that's taking place in Plymouth, Michigan. Started last Friday. It ends later on tonight. Mike, you mentioned Brady Tkachuk. We obviously are very familiar with the Tkachuk last name here in Winnipeg. How does he differ from his older brother, Matthew? Or do you see a lot of similarities between their games and maybe old dad Keith Tkachuk?
Yeah, you know, the thing about Brady, guys, and I know you probably say to yourselves, how can that be? But Brady is a little more, it seems to me, he's a little more physically intimidating. He's a little bigger. I think he's got better hands, I think, than his brother. And to me, it just seems like, you know, they both have that intensity, right? I mean, the work ethic is always there. They'll always give you 110% on every shift. It's funny, too, because I asked Brady, I says, you know, are you the best of the Tkachuks? And he kind of looked at me and said, boy, he goes, that's a difficult, and this is, he was totally serious with me, which made it funny. I was being facetious at the time, but he looked at me, tilted his head. He's like, geez, he goes, you know, that's a tough question. My dad was a pretty good player, and Matthew is, you know, he could have been called a trophy candidate if not for some other players. I says, no. I says, don't worry about it, Brady. I says, I'm just joking with you. But, I mean, he's really setting the tone as a player for the United States this year, I think. I asked, you know, Coach Bob Motzko about Brady Tkachuk. And I said to him, are you going to have to temper his, you know, his emotions when he's out there? Because this is a player, and you know the international rules, guys, you know, they're very critical on just get your stick up, or you don't even have to touch a guy and you get a penalty. So Brady plays a little bit on the edge. And I asked Motzko, I said, you know, you're going to have to tell him if he does make the team to temper his emotions out there, to temper the way he plays. He looked at me and says, no way. He goes, this Brady is still in development. This is the way he goes. This is the way he rolls. He goes, and we want him to not change anything at all when he's out there, because what it does is it sets the tempo for his line mates. It has everyone else on the opposing team knowing that he's out there and have to be aware of him. So as long as Brady Tkachuk can keep the stick down, skate in a straight line and skate, and hit clean, good body checks, I think everything will be all right. And the fact he's going to play at Boston University this year, guys, also is another, you know, obviously he said he loves David Quinn and the coaching staff over there, wants to give it a shot in college hockey, something he's always dreamed of. So he's going to play college hockey as well. So it'll be interesting to see how Brady Tkachuk rolls in the college game, which is also, you know, there's a fine line there. You're wearing the cages in college. So maybe that'll be his template on what he needs to do to be a special player at the World Juniors come December.
You know, Mike, speaking of Keith Tkachuk, former member of the St. Louis Blues, obviously Winnipeg Jets as well, of course. St. Louis Blues draft pick Jordan Kyrou had 2 goals and an assist yesterday for Team Canada. Your colleague Adam Kimmelman thinks that he's been one of the better forwards for Team Canada over the past week. Do you think he's using last year's World Junior snub as motivation?
You know, it could be. That's a good point. I mean, Kyrou is a player. I watched him at the Traverse City Prospects Tournament last September. He was there for St. Louis. There were eight teams there, and Kyrou is no doubt one of the better players in the tournament. I liked what I seen in the right wing. He's got some good size at 6'1", 180 pounds. He really lit it up last year in the Ontario Hockey League. So, you know, Kyrou really ramped up his totals, and that was his third OHL season. And what's impressed the Blues is most of the production has been at even strength guys. And we know that, you know, you could be productive on the power play. You know, you need players in those specialty teams areas. But it's very key to have success, even strength, in the NHL nowadays. And Kyrou is that kind of guy that can get the job done. And I think that's what they like to see in him. And who knows? You know, a projection I had for him is probably he might be ready, if not 18-19, definitely 2019-20, to become a real solid NHL player with the Blues.
Mike Morial is with NHL.com. He has joined us here on the program to discuss the 2017 World Junior Summer Showcase. Mike, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for your time, as I mentioned, and your insight. Great interview, buddy.
Thanks a lot, Drew. Thanks, Ezra. Have a great afternoon, guys.
Likewise, Mike. Take care of yourself. When we come back, we discuss the career of Mike Fisher. He just retired this week, and who we think should be the next captain of the Nashville Predators. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Predators captain Mike Fisher has retired from the NHL after 17 seasons. He spent his first 11 seasons with the Senators before being traded to Nashville in 2011. Fisher amassed 276 goals and 585 points in 1,088 career games.
Big congratulations to Mike Fisher on a tremendous NHL career, 17 years in length, obviously culminating in that Stanley Cup run this past season with the Nashville Predators. Previously made it to a Stanley Cup final with the Ottawa Senators back in the day. But a great career for Mike Fisher comes to an end. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Also want to give a congratulations to Myron Fix. He's the winner of the Bell Acres Golf and Country Club passes.
That a boy, Myron.
So Myron, they'll drop those in the mail for you. You're off to Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. Play around at that fine golf course. Stay tuned in the second hour of the show. We're going to give away some passes to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club for a show this coming Tuesday. So that's something to look forward to on the program.
Yeah, it was playing Bell Acres a few weeks back with a guy you might have heard of.
Who's that?
His name is Richard Pollock.
Name doesn't ring a bell. Drawing a blank. Should I know him? Where should I know him from?
You know, just he's a local Winnipeg celebrity.
Oh, okay. Anyways, no, you'll have to pass on my apologies to him. The name just doesn't ring a bell whatsoever.
We had a great time at Bell Acres. It was raining when we got out there, but we managed to get 9 holes in. We didn't get 18 holes in, but
you did some more drinking on the in the 19th hole on the,
oh, yeah,
the clubhouse afterwards.
Yeah.
I'm sure
we actually went for Chinese food after the round.
I'm not. Let's talk about the Nashville Predators and Mike Fisher, because I don't even know what to do with that. Great career for Mike Fisher. He was
Mike Fisher.
Just a very short stint as the captain of the Predators, obviously, since the Shea Weber was the captain for so many years there in Nashville. Then the trade happened where he got sent to Montreal, and Mike Fisher took over the captaincy just for that one season. Obviously, led them to the Stanley Cup Finals last year against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Where do the Predators go from here? Now, I mean, Mike Fisher's contributions on the ice will be matched. I think they've done a good job in sort of filling that role that he played. They went out and got Nick Bonino from the Penguins, and he's probably going to do a lot of what Mike Fisher did there. I mean, they're not going to miss him tremendously, I think, on the ice, maybe in the locker room, maybe his leadership, but that Predators team is a pretty good veteran group there. Who's the next captain? Because I know you hear the names, and there's a lot of sort of star power name-wise there, but there's not, to me, an overwhelming favorite like a must-have next captain. We know when, you know, Ladd left Winnipeg, Wheeler was obviously going to be the captain.
Or Scheifele.
Well, I thought Wheeler was, it was likely to be Wheeler from my perspective.
Yeah, no, I agree. But Scheifele, because he was the up-and-coming center.
Sure. But you don't want to.
It was between Scheifele and Wheeler.
Sure, yeah. Fine. But when Weber left Nashville, you sort of thought it would be Mike Fisher because he's the veteran leadership there. Now, this time around, I'm not sure who is the built-in next captain of the Nashville Predators.
Before we get into who could potentially be the next captain, and I do think with certainty I know who it's going to be, I just want to say something about Mike Fisher's career. I don't think anyone really that I've ever come across has said anything bad about Mike Fisher, and he's a guy that's not necessarily going to be a Hall of Famer. But you look at his career numbers, and mm-hmm. I was going over his career numbers, you know, 1,000-plus career games played, Drew, almost 1,100 regular season games played, 17 NHL seasons, 10 with Ottawa, 7 with Nashville, 585 career points, 620 goal seasons. His best season was 2009-2010 with 53 points. You mentioned 2007, Ottawa went to the Stanley Cup Final. He had 10 points in 20 games. He ends up with 51 career playoff points in 134 career playoff games. 134 career playoff games. That's a lot of playoff hockey.
Sure.
And Mike Fisher had 42 points last year and 18 goals. That wasn't a bad year. That's a decent year for most players in the NHL. So
Mike Fisher wanted another contract, if he wanted to keep playing.
Yeah, he could have played another couple of years.
No doubt about it.
And I'm not saying that, you know, he should have played more. I mean, he obviously decided with his family, Carey, and the rest of his family that this was the...
You're on a first name basis with her?
Mrs. Underwood.
You and Carey are tight.
Sorry. Yeah, I should be calling her Mrs. Underwood. I mean, she is the star of country music, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I just care. You and Carey.
Sorry. Mrs. Underwood.
Okay, go on.
But I mean, Mike Fisher is, I can't say enough good things about Mike Fisher and all of the work he's done in the community dating back to his years in Ottawa and then going into Nashville. I mean, I love the guy. I really do. And he had a great career. I just want to say that. I mean, he was a very good player for a long time.
He was.
So when you're talking about the next captain of the Nashville Predators, I think it's going to be Roman Josi. And I'm fairly confident that David Poile and Peter Laviolette will come to that conclusion that it is going to be Roman Josi. I mean, Roman Josi is their best defenseman, mm-hmm. and he has been for some time now. And that's not to say anything bad about P.K. Subban or Matthias Ekholm or Ryan Ellis. I mean, I don't think you're going to argue with me, Drew, that Nashville has the best top four in the league.
No questions about that.
And if they're not the best top four, then they're definitely top three. Top four.
They're the best defense in the league.
And that's one of the major reasons why they went to the Stanley Cup Finals last year, because they were able to shut down so many stars in that Western Conference, right? So
sure.
I think it's going to be Roman Josi. I mean, he's got the veteran experience. He plays more minutes than anyone else on the team. I mean, this is an unbelievable player. I think Roman Josi's a top 10 defenseman in the league. You could even argue that he's a top 5. I probably wouldn't argue that he's top 5, but he's certainly a top 10 defenseman. He's finished top 5 in Norris Trophy voting before, so maybe he is a top 5 defenseman. But when you're talking about some of the other options, to me it's really the three options. You're talking about Ryan Johansson, you're talking about Philip Forsberg, mm-hmm. and you're talking about Roman Josi. You could probably throw P.K. Subban in there as well, but I think Roman Josi, because of his experience, he's played obviously more years in Nashville, he would get the nod over P.K. Subban. I think you could maybe argue Ryan Johansson because he signed that 8-year contract recently, and he's the best center on Nashville. But I don't think Ryan Johansson is as good of a leader as Roman Josi.
I agree with you. I don't know that Ryan Johansson has a, you know, he still has that baggage attached to him from Columbus and how things.
Yeah, but you know what? I think that's gone now.
I don't think it's an issue in Nashville by any stretch, but I don't know. I don't get the feeling from him and in the way he sort of interacts that he wants to take the team on his back. He wants to be a leader, certainly, and he wants to be a driver on the team. But I don't know that he wants to be the guy who has to stand under the spotlight night in and night out and answer all the questions and deal with all the scrutiny that comes with being the captain of a team. And I think you go to Roman Josi first because he's the longest tenured player there who's really eligible for this captaincy. I think he probably is the longest tenured Predator at this point in time. I mean, Pekka Rinne, they're not going to give it to a goaltender right now.
Despite how that turned out with Luongo.
Despite what the Canucks may have once did back in the day. I think you're probably right. It is Roman Josi's to at least either accept or turn down, and I'd be surprised if he was to turn it down. And then, even I'd even go Phil Forsberg ahead of Ryan Johansson if for some reason they don't Yossi doesn't get it.
Yeah, well, you know, Philip Forsberg unfortunately has struggled at times in the playoffs, not so much this past year, but a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Philip Forsberg was just awful in the playoffs. So for me, it's Roman Yossi. But when you look at this Nashville Predators team, I do think they will be a playoff team. But we should also mention, we haven't mentioned James Neal, and they're going to miss James Neal a lot.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that, you know, Nick Bonino isn't a great player, but Nick Bonino and Scott Hartnell, I don't think are as good as Mike Fisher and James Neal. Scott Hartnell, you know, Drew, I'm a big Scott Hartnell fan, and
yes,
I think he's a good guy. You put on the wing on the third line. He's got that toughness. He's got that veteran leadership.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Predators will be a good team, but I wonder if they're going to be as good of a team, especially when you get into the playoffs next year. Are they going to be able to go on a long run again?
You're absolutely right. When we come back, we speak with Jacob McFlicker. Jacob, of course, is a Winnipegger. He's playing for Team Canada. He's been named for Team Canada at the upcoming tournament of Nikolai Puchkov, which means he's on the radar to play for Team Canada at the upcoming Olympics. We head to Switzerland and talk to Jacob next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to Switzerland and welcome to the program Jacob McFlicker. Jacob, of course, is a Winnipegger by birth. He's played the last, number of years in Europe, continuing his tremendous hockey career. And earlier this summer, he was named to Team Canada at the upcoming Nikolai Puchkov tournament in St. Petersburg, Russia. That's going to be August 14th through 17th. Jacob, welcome back to the program, and thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Our pleasure, Jacob. Always enjoy having you on the show. We're going to get to the tournament and we'll discuss how, you know, you found out you'd been named to the tournament. But before that, how was your season? You played with Biel HC in the Swiss League, 29 points in 41 games. How was your year with Biel in the Swiss League?
Honestly, I'd say satisfactory. I have higher hopes for things, but, our team went into the playoffs, and we're kind of considered a lower budget club around here. They kind of consider us an 8 to 12 club out of 12 teams in the league, but we made the playoffs. The club was satisfied, but I personally would have liked a little bit more, and I'm back again this year to kind of move us a little bit forward in the standings and get some more points myself.
Moving to Team Canada and the honor, I guess, of being named to Team Canada. You've certainly represented Canada before at the Spengler Cup in particular. But this tournament for Nikolai Puchkov coming up in a couple of weeks, how did you find out that you would be representing Team Canada at the upcoming tournament?
A little bit of communication with some of the guys at Hockey Canada, I guess. I think that started somewhere at the beginning of July, maybe. End of June somewhat. Obviously I've been kind of keeping track, since the Spengler Cup last year, since we talked, and, there was always the possibility that, the NHL guys wouldn't be going. Like I said to you guys then, I thought the NHL was going to figure out a way to figure this out and get those players going there. Clearly that's a direction that they haven't figured out, and, we're kind of I'm in that replacement group option right now. So, I've been trying to keep tabs on it. Started talking with Hockey Canada a little bit, in July there, and they've been just kind of keeping us posted what each step was as we go along here.
Jacob, will the approach to this tournament be similar to that of the Spengler Cup, considering that Team Canada is going to be facing club teams at the Nikolai Puchkov tournament, such as SKA, St. Petersburg, and Jokerit Helsinki, among others?
In a sense, but it's going to be there's not really a blueprint for this, I guess, for what's happening. Because, I mean, starting right now, I know there's a different group that landed in Sochi today, and they start the week off doing a similar style tournament, playing against a couple other Russian teams. And so there's a group of 20, 22 guys getting started with them, with the staff, with management. They're kind of showcasing themselves. And then we go off to St. Petersburg next week with a new group of 20, 22 guys, but the same staff, same management, to kind of get everybody acclimated with how the season's going to go in terms of recruiting, in terms of watching, evaluating, and seeing who's going to be the right fit for to put a roster together come February.
Jacob, I know you played with Marc-Antoine Pouliot for BLHE last year. How many of the other guys on the team are you familiar with?
I'm actually, again, with Pouliot here in Beale, and we've done a couple of Spengler Cups together. And then looking at just the roster for the St. Petersburg guys, I think I'm either closely familiar with about eight or so guys, and then played against different guys on various levels as well. So it is strange, but at the same time, it's nice to kind of go in and have a little bit of a personal level of knowing certain guys going into it.
Jacob McFlicker is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's going to be representing Canada at the Nikolai Puchkov tournament coming up later this month in St. Petersburg, Russia. That, alongside the tournament taking place in Sochi, the Sochi Hockey Open, is going to help clarify who's going to represent Canada at the upcoming 2018 Olympics. You know, Jacob, along those lines, obviously you were in touch with Team Canada, you know, to be named to this tournament. What else have they said to you? What else have they said to a lot of the other players as it pertains to how they're going to make their selections for Team Canada in PyeongChang?
Hard to say. I think, there's been a certain level of contact for myself, and I'm sure for the other guys as well. But, you know, we're all kind of scattered across the world right now. There's, just for our tournament, for these two Russian tournaments, we've got guys that are going to be on the team that are playing in Switzerland, in Germany, a bunch of Russian players, Sweden players. And then, and I know one of the things that I'd heard Hockey Canada was doing is they have to kind of pull together in terms of the Olympics, ahead of time roster of anybody that would be possible in the pool of guys that they could consider taking come February. So that may even include some guys that are on those AHL contracts that could be an option, or some other guys that they think might be wild cards to make the club if they have a standout season wherever they're playing. So it's going to be interesting to see who goes. Obviously, you like to think that you're on as narrow a list as possible, and right now it looks like we have these two teams going to Russia, and that's about 45 guys or so. You hope it's as narrowed down to that as possible, and I hope then, you know, it gets cut down even further, and I'm involved as at the end of the day here.
I guess no Sudafed for you there, Jacob, as you know that's usually one of the banned ingredients when it comes to
none of those Russian pills for me. I'll stay as legit as possible here.
That's a good policy. How familiar are you with the Team Canada coaching staff? Willie Desjardins, Dave King, Scott Walker, Craig Woodcroft. How familiar are you with these guys?
On a personal level, not quite. And that's just kind of the way it is usually. Fortunately, the most personal level I have is actually with Dave King, who was one of the assistants with us at Spengler Cup last year. And for me, that was kind of a big treat. He was kind of one of my idols growing up, and I used to have hockey videos and listen and watch him and learn how to play the game based on some of his teachings years ago with Hockey Canada when he was working with the program officially back then, and now he's still quite involved after many tours over in Russia and different stops in the NHL. So Craig Woodcroft, I believe, is now the head coach in Geneva, which is one of the other teams in our Swiss league here. This will be his first year in Switzerland, but he was coaching Minsk last year And we played them twice during the Spengler Cup. So on a personal level, he's seen me play twice when I was playing with Team Canada. And then other than that, the other guys are, we've got Scott Walker, the former NHL player. I don't have any background with him. And Willie Desjardins is most recently coming off his Vancouver stint. So I don't know what his knowledge of me is, but, you know, that's part of the process here where, they try to get guys together as quickly as possible in the season here, get a feel for how they work with us and how we work with them and, in terms of learning the systems and the way Hockey Canada wants us to play and, see if we can find the right balance for making a winning club for them, come the Olympic time.
Jacob, there's a nice Winnipeg connection on this Team Canada roster for the Nikolai Puchkov tournament. Yeah. You've got Cam Barker and Ryan Garbutt. Is it going to be nice to have a guy like Garbutt watching your back there in Russia?
Yeah, Garbs is kind of an everyman. Obviously, he had a good, solid few years in the NHL. It's kind of tough. I know him personally, so it's kind of tough to see him have a rough last year where I think he had some injuries in his shoulder and kind of spent the year down in the minors. He's taking an opportunity now over in Sochi. So that's, it's a little different for him, but it's good for him to get, you know, if you've seen Garbutt play, you know what his skill set is, and that's, he flies around the ice, like nobody else. So, you know, to maybe play on a line with him, we'll see what, if I can keep up with his speed. I just try to use my hockey sense and do what I can out there. But, yeah, it's nice to get a chance to play with Garbs. And then, obviously I've known Cam for a while and, I skated with him once, before I took off for Switzerland. And, yeah, it'll be nice to get on a roster with them and see them over in Russia in a week and a half.
Jacob, with the NHL not participating at the 2018 Winter Olympics, do you think this is going to be an opportunity to shine a brighter light on some of those great Canadian hockey players that are currently playing overseas in Europe and Russia?
It can't hurt. I mean, yeah, it's interesting because, you know, it's for most people, especially Canadians, if you're not looking at the NHL, then you're kind of out of sight, out of mind, and you don't really know that there's other leagues and other places out there that guys are still playing, still enjoying the game, and actually making a career out of it. And I've been fortunate enough to travel and be overseas for this is my sixth year over here now, and no complaints. I've enjoyed every bit of it. Yeah, you get a chance to kind of showcase yourselves on a different level, with different guys. And it ends up being, you know, it's not an NHL best on best, but it's a best out of the rest best kind of. And, you know, you're trying to compete. And, when guys put themselves on showcase, other doors can start to open up again. So, you kind of see where things go after that.
Jacob, we'll let you go with this last question. I think we probably asked you about it back when we had you on earlier this year. But, you know, what would it mean to you if after all these tournaments are played and after all the decisions are made, if you were ultimately selected to compete for Team Canada and play for Team Canada at the upcoming Olympics?
You know what, it's right now it's kind of a work in progress for me. It's honestly, it's on my mind kind of every day of I'm preparing every way. I have almost a whole season of the Swiss League to go through until the Olympics actually begin. We would end up playing 46 of our 50 regular season games by that time. But it'd be hard to describe what the scenario, what the feelings and emotions would be like to be able to represent Canada on an Olympic level. It's something that, you know, especially over the last number of years, professionally, that I never thought possible. I've watched it. I've paid attention to it. And I'm a hockey fan at heart, but, to get that opportunity would be, just kind of a lights out thing. And, for myself, for my family and friends, and, to be out there on that stage would be, it shaked me up a little bit. And, you know, it's hard to describe what that sensation and feeling would be.
Jacob McFlicker is from Winnipeg. He plays his hockey professionally overseas in Switzerland. He's going to be representing Team Canada at the upcoming tournament of Nikolai Puchkov. And Jacob, we're certainly cheering for you that if the day and time comes when you're going to be named to Team Canada for the upcoming Olympics, you know that you have the great support here of us in Winnipeg and everybody else cheering you on. So thank you for joining us, Jacob, and all the best on your upcoming season and best of luck in the upcoming tournament.
Thanks, guys. Hopefully, next time we're talking, we're a little bit closer to the goal and moving forward and getting a chance to be there in February. So
sounds like a good idea. Thanks, Jacob. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Jacob.
When we come back, we're going to discuss the future of John Tavares as a member of the New York Islanders. Is he bound to stay there long term, or is he going to be a big unrestricted free agent at the end of the season?
Should he stay or should he go?
That would be fair enough as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
You're on the curve. On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. On TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Just trying to get ready and be the best player. About any progress that might be happening with those negotiations, or is it something you want to get into right now?
Yeah, I think I just keep all that internal. We've had great open communication. It's obviously a great place to play. I've really enjoyed my time being an Islander and want that to continue. So, for me, I think mostly I just want to try to focus on being ready for the upcoming season and being at my best and being able to contribute.
John Tavares speaking about his potential contract negotiations with the New York Islanders. He's eligible to be a free agent at season's end. Question is, will he get there? Will they trade him before that? Or will he sign a long-term contract extension with the New York Islanders? Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. I have a 4-pack of tickets to give away to this Tuesday's show at Rumors. Text LOL to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Text LOL to 129090, and we're going to send you and three of your friends to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club for this coming Tuesday's show. That's, again, one more time. Text LOL to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply, and you can go to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club this coming Tuesday.
Drew, what are your thoughts on the use of LOL in texting situations?
I have actually become more of an LOL texter. In to express when I'm being mirthful in a text messaging situation. So I used to be against it. There's the famous Curb episode, of course, where I forget the character. Instead of laughing, she just says LOL nowadays, and it drives Larry crazy because that would drive somebody. Instead of, if you were ever just to say LOL instead of laughing, that would drive me crazy as well. But in terms of texting, I'm okay with texting LOL.
I think you have to use it because you're texting so much in a given day.
Yeah.
You have to acknowledge that it's something funny, right? That's to me what it is. You're not actually laughing out loud, obviously, but using LOL in real life, verbalizing LOL is, that's not right.
Verbalizing LOL is not right, but I think using it in a text message situation, then yes, you are... That is acceptable at this point in time.
Do you think Brian Posehn uses LOL in his texts?
I don't know. Brian's coming to Rumors, though, so you can ask him. He's coming to Rumors, and he's going to put on a great performance. You know him, of course. He's been in the Big Bang Theory. Yeah, that's where he stands out to me the most.
But I'm going to be there for that.
You're going to be there for that? That's excellent. He's coming September 14th through 16th. Ivan Decker is going to be your comedian on Tuesday. So remember, text us LOL to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And I'll pick our winner this segment and give him some tickets to Rumors. So what do you think, Ezzy? Tavares? We sort of went through this a couple years ago with Steven Stamkos, and he ended up re-signing in Tampa Bay. We remember that chaotic 15-minute window there, and he ends up signing in Tampa Bay. What do you think about Tavares? Do you think that he's going to leave Long Island? Do you think he's going to leave the New York Islanders, or do you think they get something done with him, and he is going to remain as a member of the New York Islanders for on a long-term basis?
Yeah, it's the $10 million question, because that's probably what John Tavares is going to get in his next contract. He might get more. I have to say, first of all, I don't think the Islanders' acquisition of Jordan Eberle is going to have anything to do with John Tavares staying. And we talked about Matt Duchene a couple of segments ago, Drew. Yeah. I think the Islanders were hot on the trails of Matt Duchene. But when you're talking about whether or not John Tavares is going to stay in New York, I really do think it is going to have to more so do with where they're going with the future of this organization, and if he likes that. And when you look at the Islanders, people forget the Islanders almost made the playoffs last year. Mm-hmm. They had a horrible start to the season, but I think they were only 1 point out of making the playoffs last year, I should say. And John Tavares, I've said it before, I think he's a top five center in the NHL. And that's the reason why Team Canada always taps him on the shoulder to play for them at the World Cup or the Olympics. So when you're talking about Tavares, I mean, the Islanders, even though they're probably a long shot to make the playoffs, or maybe I shouldn't say long shot. I wouldn't say they're a favorite to make the playoffs. They're in there with those teams like the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Florida Panthers, the Toronto Maple Leafs for those last couple of spots. I don't think anybody's going to say the Islanders.
I'm surprised you included the Lightning in there, to be honest.
Well, I think the Lightning will make the playoffs next year.
Right, but do you think that they're, I mean, I think the Lightning should be towards the upper echelon in the Eastern Conference, not a sort of.
Well, they missed the playoffs last year.
I know, and that was a surprise to everybody, because I think for a lot of people, they were the Stanley Cup. A lot of people predicted them to come out of the East.
If Stamkos is healthy all year, how do they not make the playoffs, right? They kept most of their roster together.
Yes.
And, you know, they were able to trade Ben Bishop, and they were able to basically keep most of their roster together, obviously trading Drouin for Mikhail Sergachev with the Montreal Canadiens. But back to Tavares, though, Drew, when you're talking about his future, I mean, I think a lot of people are hoping that he becomes a UFA, because he would probably be the most sought-after UFA since Zach Parise and Ryan Suter in 2012. We just don't see those types of generational players become UFAs. You mentioned Steven Stamkos.
Sure, he never actually hit July 1st. But
exactly, right. And I do think John Tavares is going to stay with New York, and I think it's more so to do, as I mentioned, with where he sees this team going in the future. And they have a lot of good prospects in the system. When you're talking about guys like Matthew Barzell, who just had a great season in the Western Hockey League, or you're talking about a guy like Josh Hosang. Now, these aren't necessarily high-end players in the vein of a Patrick Laine or an Austin Matthews. They also have Kiefer Bellows, who they signed, drafted in the 2016 draft, and others. But when you're talking about, you know, some of the players on this team, I mean, it's still a very good team. I worry a little bit about how are they going to replace Travis Hamonic in the lineup. And they obviously recently signed Calvin DeHaan. So your top four is still looking pretty good. You've got Nick Leddy there. You've got Johnny Boychuk there. We just mentioned Calvin DeHaan. So it's a decent defense there in New York. I don't know how much better they've gotten since last year, though. And that's the biggest question mark to me. When you look at some of the other teams in the East and what they've done, we mentioned Tampa Bay. I mean, we expect them to be back in the playoffs. The Florida Panthers, I would expect to be back in the playoffs, or at the very least, they're going to be better than they were last year. Mm-hmm. But this Islanders team, there's more so going on off the ice, well, as opposed to what's going on the ice. And it centers around their new arena.
Well, and I think that's the big deal breaker here. If the Islanders can get a proposal done and approved for building a new arena, and there's talk in the Long Island that they've issued requests for proposals to build a new arena around Belmont Park, which is of course the racetrack on Long Island. And the Islanders are expected to submit a proposal to build a brand new arena over there and get away from Brooklyn, which has been an unmitigated disaster, and finally shore up and solidify their arena situation. And if they can get that done, let's say this year, obviously they can't get it built this year, but if they can get an arena underway and a guarantee that they're just going to stabilize the franchise, I think that'll help Tavares make up his mind to stay in Long Island. But if there's still uncertainty, and if they're maybe playing in Brooklyn, or they're maybe playing, I don't know, Kansas City, or who knows where they're playing, then I could see him saying, you know what, there's just too much uncertainty floating around this organization. I need to go to July 1st. I need to see what the market offers me. But if they get it done, then I think he would sign. I don't know why I feel that way, because I was of the opinion that Stamkos was gone out of Tampa Bay.
It looked like he was at a certain point.
Yeah, but yet here we are with Tavares, and for whatever reason, I think they can get something done with him for some reason.
Yeah, by the way, Drew, the other guy I forgot about when I was talking about the prospects was Ryan Pollock from Manitoba.
Sure.
That was the other guy I wanted to throw in, a young D prospect, played a little bit for the Islanders last year. He's going to play more this year, so he has a good chance of playing in the top four. But back to Tavares, though. The new arena is a big one, and I don't think that they can play more than one more year at Barclays. I believe they can get out of that lease, if I'm not mistaken, after one more year, maybe two more years. But the new arena is going to be a big one, but I do believe that they'll solve that. I don't think the New York Islanders are going anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have a great fan base. I mean, let's be honest, moving to the Barclays Center was a huge mistake.
It was an error, yes. And they're eligible to break their lease as of January.
Right.
So it's a 25-year lease, but there's an out clause. I think the out clause would still have them play two more seasons.
Right.
At Barclays, which would allow them to, of course, build the new arena in that point in time. And then a couple years from now, they would move formally back to that Belmont Park new arena.
They should have just stayed at Nassau for another 3 years.
Well, they should have been able to. The problem there was the water was so poisonous between the Nassau County Board of Commissioners, or whatever they're called,
well, the Barclays
and ownership
Center,
Charles Wang.
Drew, the Barclays Center, first off, the scoreboard is not in the middle. It's off-center. And the ice was the worst ice maybe ever in the NHL. Remember that whole issue with the piping underneath the ice, and the ice was awful and it was melting. And so, I mean, the Barclays Center is not a hockey arena. It's a basketball arena, right? So, I mean, they have to figure that out. But I think ultimately John Tavares will sign with the Islanders, because they will give him an 8-year deal, which is probably going to be, you know, in the neighborhood of $10 million, $11 million a year. I do believe he wants to stay there.
When we come back, JP Vigée is going to join us. We'll talk to him about off-season training. We'll talk to him about the Jets off-season. Also want to give a big shout-out and a congratulations to the winner of the Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club tickets. Deborah Kahanovich has won the tickets.
I know Deborah.
There you go. You know Deborah. We both know Deborah. She's off to Rumors on Tuesday. Stay tuned. Next week's show, we'll have some more giveaways to both Bell Acres and Rumors Restaurant.
Congrats
and
to
Comedy
Deborah.
Club.
Love it.
Coming up next, JP Vigée, he's going to join us on the program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program a very good friend of ours, JP Vigée. You, of course, know him here on the station as a Winnipeg Jets analyst. Also does hockey training and skills development through Vigée Hockey. JP, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And it's a nice sunny day. How are you guys doing?
Well, we don't have any sunshine in the studio, but in about 26 minutes time or so, we're going to get outside and enjoy the bright sunny day like you just mentioned.
Nice.
JP, I obviously brought you on. We're going to talk a little bit about the Jets offseason. We want to talk about sort of offseason training. I have to start with Nolan Patrick. It was about, 6 weeks ago where he was drafted second overall by the Philadelphia Flyers. And you've worked with Nolan for years. Of course, he being from Winnipeg, played for the Brandon Wheat Kings. You know, from your perspective, you know, how proud of were you to see Nolan get drafted second overall, and just sort of, you know, how much of that hard work that he's put in, summer out, off-season in, off-season out, do you see paying off finally and getting drafted second overall?
Well, it's very proud, right? Like, I never got to go through any of that. So you're kind of vicarious to live through what he's going through. And, you know, everyone that thinks it's all just, you know, play hockey games and put up points and then that's all it is. But the work ethic that he has behind it, you know, the summers of work, the fall, the spring, he doesn't take a whole lot of time off. You don't get to in the hockey world anymore, and it's very exciting, because now I told him this is phase one of his real life, right? Now the professional world begins, and it's a job. It's a 24 our thing, and I think it's going to be exciting. Step one is done. Now he's got to move on to the harder work.
JP, I know right now you're working with hockey players through your summer camps. For those who aren't familiar with Vijay Hockey, what else do you offer young hockey players aside from the traditional kind of bantam and midget-aged summer camps?
Well, depending on the time of year. In the spring, we're going to do I do a development program that focuses solely on the kids. I find that a lot of spring hockey right now is geared toward playing games. I want the kids to have that puck on their stick, and we want to move and teach them things that they sometimes don't get in a big practice. So these practices are all about them, and we focus on their development only. We don't play a whole lot of tournaments or any of that. In the summer, we're going to focus on getting kids ready for tryouts. So what that entails, it's not just a conditioning thing. It's actually getting them better for the upcoming year. A lot of guys just they skate for a week or two, and they don't really focus on getting better. They work on just getting in shape and shaking off the rust. We're going to look at doing things to make you better so you can achieve higher goals on a year-to-year basis, and that's how we proceed. In the winter, a lot of the kids play a lot, so I focus a lot on the younger guys, the 8 to 12-year-olds. Those guys don't play quite as much, so we do an in-season skill development where we'll fine-tune their skating, work on their shooting, make sure their passing technique is right, all those little details that sometimes it's hard to do in a practice because you have 15, 20 players going all over the place, and we really work on what they need. It has nothing to do about systems. It has nothing to do about wins and losses. It's all about them and all about what they need to get better and also to give them success so they can have more fun.
TSN 1290 analyst JP Vijay is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. JP, you hear so much nowadays, you know, speed is obviously a point of emphasis for a lot of teams. It's sort of cyclical. Sometimes it's size is all the rage in the NHL. Now we're in a phase where speed is all the rage. And you hear a lot of analysts say, you know, he needs to improve his skating or he needs to get his skating a little bit better. How difficult is it for a player to improve their skating, particularly when they're, you know, 18 years old, 19 years old, they've already been drafted? How difficult is it at that point in time for a guy to improve his skating?
Well, I mean, it's difficult, but it's not impossible. And most of those, you know, the crowd we're talking about now is already an established player. So that kind of breakdown and analysis in the skating stride is something you would do in the off season and really slow it down and focus on making sure things are right. His technique is right, refining it. You never want to totally break down a player to rebuild them because they have that foundation that's given them success already. So we're going to look at enhancing what they have, modifying it a little bit, trying to maximize their ability through that. And I think you can do it. And players all want to get better, right? Especially when we're getting at that level where they're on the cusp of becoming a professional or getting drafted. And guys always want that edge. They always want to get a little bit better. So if that player comes to you, you can really soak into that and really refine their game and make sure that their edge control is better at top speed, making sure they can do those things at full speed, tight turns, pivots, keep their tempo of the game up, because that's what every NHL team wants.
JP, in your experience working with junior age players, how have you seen skills training and development change over the last, let's say, 3, 4, 5 years?
Well, that's really when it's taken fold. I think we're looking at the players almost becoming, I don't want to call them a mini professional, they act like professionals. The kids I work with, some of them only work part-time just to get a little bit of spending money, but they're at the gym 5 days a week. They all have personal trainers, right? They're on the ice anywhere from 3 to 5 days a week with their specialized coaches, working on the details of their game that they need to enhance. If it's puck protection, if it's speed, if it's agility, shooting, whatever it is, guys are putting in that time. It was never that way. That was the stuff you did only as a professional when we played. Now those kids at 17, 18, 19, they're doing it. They're paying the price, and you're seeing it. The NHL has become younger, but the training has become younger. The specialized coaches are younger, are coming to the players younger, so they're getting that training way in advance of what it used to be, and you're seeing the NHL bring in those 18- and 19-year-olds and have success where it was very rare to see that before, and now it's more common.
JP Vijay, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know JP, of course, as a Winnipeg Jets analyst here on the station. He also runs training and skills development through Vijay Hockey. JP, for the you know, the non-elite hockey players out there that, you know, might be in, you know, in their early teens, how do you balance between playing too much hockey and, you know, and improving your skills in the off season? We know that it's, you know, for better or worse now, it's almost a 12-month-a-year you know, activity. But a guy like Wayne Gretzky would always take the summers off to play baseball. So how do you sort of balance the two phenomenons?
Well, look, I love my kids, especially at those young ages, anywhere between 8 and 15, they got to have time off. I love to have them have a couple months off. You know, and when you come back, you can do a little more. The key to an athlete is the hunger behind that player. If a player is burnt out, you're not going to get any strides out of him. He's going to be, he doesn't even want to be there. So at what point are you beating a dead horse? You want that player to come back and be hungry and want to learn and be on the ice and be excited to be out there. And that's the number one thing to begin with. And then you just look at what they do. You know, I have my kids play some volleyball, play some basketball, golf. You got to get out, you know, and do other things. The key to Canadian hockey is the passion for the game. And you have to keep that. So we balance that. In the winter, kids skate, you know, anywhere between 3 to 5 or 6 days a week. And then in the spring, some do as well till the snow comes down. But toward the middle of May, early June, I think it's time to shut it down and do some baseball, do some other things, because you're only a kid for so long and you have to have that balance of lifestyle. And I think that's very important to have as a kid, to learn early so you can have that as an adult as you grow up.
JP, you recently took part in the Hit the Ice series, which sees some of the best young Aboriginal hockey players from across Canada come together for a two-week NHL-like training camp. What was that experience like for you?
You know, it's actually very different because a lot of these kids have never been coached or have been taught. They all have some sort of natural ability and natural skill. And you can see that their skill's gotten them pretty far. But to work with them, and then once they realize some of the details, the strides and gains they can make in a short time are very incredible. In a two-week period, you could see players really buy in and soak in. And the first few times, they look at you like you're partially crazy. But then they realize and see the gains that they've made. And then they just come to you with questions. And they just keep asking. And you could see that they're at that age where they want to soak in everything, because this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for them to advance themselves, because they would never get seen where they come from.
JP, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you, of course, about the Winnipeg Jets and the offseason that the Jets had. What did you think of the moves that Jets GM Kevin Cheveldayoff made on July 1st, specifically the Dmitry Kulikov signing and the Steve Mason signing?
Well, look, you know, from the end of last season, what were the two criteria the Winnipeg Jets were screaming for in needs? Defensive help and a goaltender, right? Kevin Cheveldayoff addressed those. I think now the onus is on the players, right? The pieces are there. Paul Maurice has to juggle and get them into the right place to have success. And I think the players have to buy in now and I don't want to say put out, but make this the Winnipeg Jets. Arguably, they have three or four lines that they can roll. They have six or seven defensemen that can play at any night. What the pairings will be, what the line combinations will be, it'll be very interesting, because Paul Maurice will probably have a lot of napkins folded up throughout the summer with excitement. And, you know, an experienced goaltender to push Connor Hellebuyck is not a bad thing. Now the Winnipeg Jets are in a spot where I think there is no excuse, right? There is no more, we don't have the depth. We didn't have the players to play. We're missing players. I think there's a clean slate, lots of competition in the Central, but you have to realize that it's never going to be easy. Look at Nashville. A few points away from not even making the playoffs to a couple wins away from the Stanley Cup. So I think it's interesting. The pieces are there. Now it's up to the players and management, or the coaches, to put it together and make it happen on the ice.
JP, final question for you here, and I also usually have folded up napkins in my pockets, but it's because I'm eating.
That's for the barbecue sauce that he's constantly eating.
I thought it was mustard.
JP, how important do you think it's going to be to have a fully healthy Tyler Myers next year for the Jets? Because as you know, he eats up a lot of minutes for Paul Maurice.
Well, if you think about it, that's like a top four free agent acquisition that they never had to go after, right? If he's healthy, you're top six in any, I don't know what the particular order is, Myers, Bufflin, Trouba, Kulikov, Morrissey, Enstrom. There's your six defensemen. How they play your matchup, I think, will be very interesting. You can see that there's lots of possibilities. who's going to play with whom. I think it gives the opportunity of having less minutes stressed on Dustin Byfuglien and Jacob Trouba. Keep everybody healthy at the 22-minute range, right? And then that's a chance for everyone to go. But again, one game, you could have two injuries, and we're talking a different story. So the Jets are healthy. How long they stay healthy is going to be a key interesting point.
JP Vijay is a Winnipeg Jets analyst here on TSN 1290. You can also find his work at vijayhockey.com. JP, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for doing this. We'll see you again real soon. As hockey season just around the corner.
That'll work, boys. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, JP. Thanks again. Let's head to break. When we come back, we look at some signings from around the NHL. One final segment. We wrap it up here on Saturday morning on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Brodin to Koivu. Koivu looking. Fires a score! Granlund tips it in, and the power play goal has Minnesota back within two. Here's a chance, and Niederreiter scores! The backhander beats Anderson 2-0 for Nino, and it's 2-1 Minnesota.
Between Nino Niederreiter and Mikael Granlund, that accounts for 51 goals last season for the Minnesota Wild. They get them both under contract. They avoid arbitration with them both. Get those two key young members of the Minnesota Wild under contract. Granlund, it's 3 years, $17.25 million. That's a salary cap hit of $5.75 million. Niederreiter, it's 5 years, $26.25 million. A salary cap hit of $5.25 million. Two key members of the Minnesota Wild under contract for the next 3 years and 5 years, respectively. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Final segment on this Saturday morning is brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys are known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue, the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Be sure to tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Check out their operation. It's a fantastic operation and really interesting to see all the detailed work that they perform to get your jersey looking just perfect. That's Keener Jerseys, keenerjerseys.com, 982 Portage Avenue, their storefront, Keener Jerseys.
They do the Gold Eyes jerseys as well.
Yeah. Well, they're just absolutely gorgeous jerseys. The way, it's fascinating the work that they have going on there.
They have a lot of cool stuff going on there. And yeah. Shout out to Jason and Keener. Keener was actually in a comedy showcase last night at the Park Theater.
Yeah, I had a chat with Keener. When was I there? Last week, maybe 10 days ago, I stopped in there and Keener and I were chatting about the comedy world because he actually performed, I think I mentioned this on air, he performed at Rumors. As part of the Rumors had that sort of roast-off competition. So, you know, all the...
And he went up against Benji.
Our good friend Benji Rothman. Yeah. And so everything was tying together here on the program. So, you know, it was sort of a small sort of Winnipeg world situation in that case.
Yeah, we're going to have to go out for some beers with Keener and Jason. Haven't seen them in a while. And I bet they're getting really busy right about now around this time of the year.
So the hockey season rapidly approaching. So no doubt about that.
No, Drew, I just want to throw one thing out right now.
Okay.
You know, we've got about 10 minutes left in the show or so.
Yeah.
Maybe less.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this box of Timbits. I bring Timbits every single week.
It's true.
I go to Tim Hortons here on Pembina.
Yeah.
And that box has not been opened yet.
Well, you know.
I don't think that's ever happened.
It is unusual.
What's wrong with us? Are we on a hunger strike?
No. I think we've just been very engaged in the show and busy with the show. And Rory hasn't somehow.
Here, pass them over to Rory.
I'll pass them over to Rory because Rory the Hoover has not yet vacuumed them down on the program. And Dave isn't here. And Dave usually is good for a good four or five Timbits on a Saturday morning.
I remember back in the day when Richie was on the show. It seems like a long time ago. It was only really just over over a year ago
yeah.
that Richie was on the show. I used to, you know, he used to drive me crazy. He used to take a bite, half bites, and he'd put the other half Timbit back in the box. He used to drive me crazy.
World's greatest monster, I believe, is how you once referred to him as that. And, yeah, so anyways, the Timbits are now being eaten.
Sorry, I just had to bring that up.
It's true. It was a little bit unusual.
There's a box of fresh Timbits there, and nobody's taking a bite.
I want to see his 7 minutes to go on the show. Were you planning on wishing me a happy birthday?
Oh, no.
It's Monday, so it's not today.
Yeah, exactly. That's
yeah, I know, but you haven't said anything, you know.
When we had the show on July 22nd, I don't think you wished me a happy birthday.
I think I did.
That's a premature happy birthday, Drew.
I need all the praise in the world. I need my ego stroked at all times, and the great birth of Drew Mindell, celebrating my 53rd birthday, I need that to be acknowledged at all times.
By the way, you don't look a day over 51.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
You
know that people legitimately think that I'm actually, like, significantly older?
Well, remember back in the day when, I think the first year we were on the station, when it was still Sports Radio 1290?
Yeah.
I think someone actually called in and wanted to know how old you actually were.
Yeah, like, people actually think that I'm, like, in my 50s or something.
No, I think we said you were in your 70s.
70s, okay. Yeah. Well, whatever.
Talking about growing up with Charlie Chaplin and all that.
Yeah. I have youthful exuberance on my side, so that's okay on that front, but...
I don't think you can wish somebody a happy birthday 2 days in advance. I think a day in advance is the max.
I don't know. I'm not pretty sure that there's no rules involved in this sort of thing. You could have given me, I gave your wedding a shout out. That's not for another 2 weeks.
Let's throw it to Twitter at ICSEG at ICDrew. Tell us, can you wish someone a birthday 2 days in advance?
Or alternatively, do you think Ezzy was going to remember to wish me a birthday?
I do
birthday
know that your birthday. I know it's August 7th.
Yeah,
I do know that.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's 2 days in advance. That seems like so far away.
I thought there'd be cake. I'm a little disappointed. I thought you would have brought me a cake.
I brought the Timbits, and you haven't eaten any.
Well, there's no candles in them. Nobody's singing happy birthday. It's sort of upsetting.
Hey, if you're going to be upset that I didn't wish you happy birthday earlier,
yeah.
Then when we had the show July...
I bought you a wedding gift yesterday.
Really?
Yeah.
What'd you get me?
I'm not telling you. You got to go... You're going to... You know, I bought something very near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, I got to tell you. I've been getting some nice stuff, but those presents, they never stop coming.
Well, you know...
I've been getting a lot of, you know, salad utensils.
You haven't eaten the salad in going on 25 years, but I'm not sure why. You know what, Izzy? I was considering buying you a salad utensil, I'll be honest.
Instead, you just bought me a scale?
Well, and I said to myself, what is Izzy going to use? It's like, is he going to use this salad bowl that I've considered to purchase and these salad tongs, or is he going to use this giant trough of meat that I've purchased for him? And so I bought you a giant trough of meat.
Yeah, just the meat from the Illegal Curve sandwich from Bernstein's, right?
Just schnitzel. I just bought you 12 months a year of schnitzel is what I bought you. I thought that would be something that would be near and dear to your heart.
You know 100% that would be the present that I would love more than anything.
More than anything. Naomi would hate me forever if I bought you, you know, unlimited meat for a year.
Naomi would love that.
I don't know. I think she's, you know,
stop by the old trough and make a sandwich.
I'm not sure that's going to be, you know, I think she wants this marriage to last a long time. So I don't know that your arteries can handle a year full of meat. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I got to practice for next week, right?
For the pierogi eating contest.
Yeah.
It's true. Are you preparing?
I have been preparing.
Okay.
I've been going to Mom's Pierogies in the North End. And
yeah.
I've been sticking some pierogies down my gullet.
That's good. You do have a gullet. You're like a duck. You just swallow them whole.
Yeah. I don't think I have a chance against Stepdaddy Jay.
No, I don't think you have a chance either. I'm more concerned about what condition are you going to be in next Saturday. This contest is Friday night at the Spirit of Ukraine Pavilion.
Yep. Starts at 9:45. Chevrier Boulevard.
There you go. What kind of condition are you going to be in Saturday morning?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
The last time I was in the pierogi eating competition, I mentioned it during the first segment. I wasn't in last year's. I was in the first annual.
Yeah.
After I ate, I think I ate something like 25 pierogies in 7 minutes.
Yeah.
My stomach just kept expanding.
Yeah, well, it's not healthy.
And I remember about an hour after, I just had to go to bed.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. At least
I was so full, I couldn't do anything else.
Yeah, it's not a good situation at all. I want to give a shout-out quickly, as clearly the show has tremendously gone off the rails in this last segment. I want to give a shout-out to the Canada Games. I've attended some of the Canada Games in the first week, and I was at the baseball semifinal on Thursday between Saskatchewan and Ontario. 7,000 people packed Shaw Park last night.
Great sports fans in Winnipeg.
7,000 people packing Shaw Park last night for the gold medal game between Manitoba and Saskatchewan. And I knew there'd be a lot of people there. I knew there'd be a pretty good buzz. But to see pretty much the entire stadium sold out as part of the Canada Games, what a performance, what a great showing by the sports fans in Manitoba. And I do encourage you all week long, the second week of the Canada Games, if you're looking for something to do, maybe you want to take the kids. We took Aaron to some of the Canada Games activities. It's a great way to spend some time. Great athletes, great competition, something really worth getting involved in. And Folklorama, that also starts, I think that starts either tonight or tomorrow night. That's also something worth getting involved in. There's so much going on in Winnipeg right now that... get out there, get involved, enjoy the summer, for Pete's sake, people. It's a fantastic time in Winnipeg. Get out there and enjoy it. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Want to give a big thank you to all of our guests, JP Vijay, TSN 1290 analyst, Jacob McFlicker, he's a member of Team Canada, and Mike Morial, staff writer for NHL.com. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on iTunes, through Google Play, whatever you want to subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. Support them because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big props to producer Rory, doing a great job. For Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for World Junior Summer Showcase action tonight at 6 p.m. on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.